Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Kids will be kids is a familiar saying that suggests bullying is a normal part of growing up. Yet with continued reports of beatings, death threats, and 24-hour harassment via social media and other technology, bullying has become a dangerous, even life-threatening epidemic. Children can't get away from it. It's led to lasting impacts on young people, even suicide. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Bullying can occur randomly or regularly. It can happen daily, weekly, or monthly. Nationally, 1 in 10 bullying victims report being targeted daily, while 1 in 5 victims are bullied once or twice a month. Parents, educators, and other school officials, even policymakers, are struggling to find solutions to reduce bullying and ensure schools are safe for all students. Joining me today to talk about potential solutions and coping mechanisms is Lee Shipway, a licensed mental health therapist and the co-founder of Peaceful Solutions Counseling in Wausau. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you.
Also joining us today, Wausau School Board Vice President Pat McKee, who's been working to implement policies to address bullying in the Wausau School District. Pat, thanks so much for being here to share your personal thoughts on this issue. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So your questions and calls are welcome. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Every 2 years, the United Way of Marathon County releases its life report. I don't know if you had a chance to see this. It details the most significant problems and opportunities facing people who live in central Wisconsin. More than 43% of high school students who took the most recent survey said they believe bullying at school is a significant problem. 27% of students said they don't feel they have a teacher or adult they can confide in if they have a problem. You know, Pat, you're so in contact with teachers and parents in the Wausau School District. I guess I'm curious if those statistics surprise you.
Actually, they do surprise me. And again, these are, just to reiterate, these are my thoughts and opinions. Don't represent those of the full school board in any way. But when you look at the data that we have gathered for the last 3 years, of the reported bullying incidents, about 3/4 of those come from elementary students.
Wow.
And again, this is the reported figures. And only 9% come from high school students.
Okay. So it seems to be more prevalent with the younger.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah, of
course. I'm not sure that it's actually more prevalent with the younger kids. I think the younger kids feel more comfortable reporting it. I think when kids are in high school, they don't want to appear weak or like a sissy, and so or they think people aren't going to do anything about it, so they don't report it.
Absolutely.
There is that to consider, too. I think before we go any further, I'd really like to ask you if you can define bullying for us. It sounds simple, but I guess is there a difference between bullying and teasing, for example? I mean, what are we talking about here? Pat, maybe you can take that first.
Sure. I mean, we have a policy within the district that does attempt to define bullying with a lot of specificity, and it includes, I'll just give a couple examples, verbal taunts, spreading rumors, name-calling, put-downs, extortion for money or possessions, threatening another person, manipulating friendships, and also cyberbullying, as well as organizing others to threaten, tease, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. or exclude a targeted individual.
Okay. Is that go along with the same thing that you see as what bullying is?
It does. That's a pretty good definition. We see it as direct bullying and sometimes indirect bullying, which is bullying not directly communicated to a targeted youth, but spreading rumors about that kid behind their back would
sure.
be an example of indirect.
Okay. So there are different kinds of ways that this happens in the school. Pat, I know that you have been personally passionate about addressing this. What are the things that you've heard from parents and students that really led you to call for changes?
A couple things stand out. Like in the last 8 years on the board, you know, all the board members have an opportunity to hear from parents and teachers and administrators, as you've said. And the one thing that really hit me a couple of years ago was when parents started to say, you know what, I'm going to remove my child from the district because of these types of incidents. And bullying was a part of it, but it also just had to do with behavior issues where the classrooms were disrupted routinely. Children were not able to learn at the level or at the rate at which they wanted to because they were dealing with some of these outside influences. And that message that I started to get, not just from parents, but frankly from teachers who were just exhausted trying to deal with and manage these things when they're there to teach and instruct our kids. So the culmination of really, you know, those two things and just, you know, hearing from parents, you know, I'm reporting this, but nothing's being done. Or, you know, we went and talked to so-and-so and nothing was being done. And so up until a couple years ago, I was hearing that quite a bit. And fortunately, it's much improved this year.
What do you think is changed? What's changed in the district to make that?
My opinion is there's always been a policy on bullying, right? And everybody can argue, you know, the wording of it, or does it include this? Does it not include this? How do you report it? Where do you report it, et cetera? But at the end of the day, there needs to be a clear set of consequences and actions when these are rectified or when they are identified in terms of how do you move forward then from that point on. If a student is allowed to continually display those bullying behaviors, they're going to keep up with it. And up until a couple of years ago, frankly, when we hired Dr. Keith Hiltz to be the superintendent, I feel that he and his administration have not only taken this very seriously, but they have taken a number of steps to be proactive in terms of being very clear with students. Here's an acceptable course of behavior. We want to help you get there. We want to do everything we can to make sure that, you know, you get on the right track, so to speak. But if you don't, there's, you know, repercussions to that. And they're doing a very good job of implementing that, being consistent, making sure that kids are following in what they should be doing.
Are you getting a lot of buy-in from teachers? Has the response been good?
I think the response has been overwhelmingly positive. In this year in particular, I can think of three incidents in which people called me about. In prior years, it would have been multitudes of that.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And even from the teachers. I mean, they're seeing a lot of this stuff firsthand, mm-hmm. you know, having to deal with it. And in the previous administration, kids were cycling through, you know, they get sent to the office or whatever it is, and they're back in the classroom. You know, it's like 20, 22 times we had reported incidents. And now that's not happening.
Okay.
20 to 22 times of the same child.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. And not all bullying. I should clarify. Not all bullying issues, but behavior type things. Some of which were, some of which were not.
Wow. That number just stands out to me. I mean, that just seems really extreme. Wow. One question I've always had, and I'd really love to know the answer. What turns a child into a bully? I mean, Lee, do you know? I mean, what leads to this kind of behavior in children?
Well, interestingly, there's kind of two opposite ends of the coin in terms of kids that decide to be bullies. One is kids who feel very inadequate, insecure. They don't have a lot of social supports as well as supports at home, so they feel powerless. One of the quickest ways to gain power is to have someone else be afraid of you. By having that fear, it produces a power imbalance, mm-hmm. and then that person feels charged by that. The second type of kid, believe it or not, is a kid who maybe has a lot of stuff going for him or her and is very popular, is part of the social life at school, but wants to make sure they remain that way. And so if they see someone that is different from them, they don't want to be associated with them. So the quickest way to make sure that no one thinks that I'm associated with this kid is to make fun of that kid, to maybe verbally harass that child and make sure that that student is very different than me and everybody knows that.
That's interesting because this is something I was reading a panel discussion last year from the Federal Partners in Bullying Prevention Summit. It's hosted by the Department of Education. And I'd like to share this. One speaker said that popularity and status within high school cliques can bring out the worst in teens. Students at the center of their social circles, many of them who impress teachers as being responsible, caring leaders, can be the biggest bullies of all. They tend to target the teens they see as different or weak, and the smart ones really know how to hide it from their teachers. How can teachers or parents, how can they raise awareness about this and see what's happening with these popular kids that – everyone thinks this is the good kid. This is the captain of the football team. This is the cheerleader. This is the.
I think the only way that that's going to be dealt with is by bringing it to light. And so if teachers and adults aren't seeing it, because these kids you're talking about that are sharp enough and savvy enough to do it where teachers and adults aren't seeing it, we have to teach other kids that you need to be not a bystander but what's called an upstander, that you need to speak up and you need to report this to an adult or an authority figure who can help with that situation and will do something about it. Interestingly, there's a very good website called stopbullying.gov, which is through the United States government. And they say that about 20 to 30% of kids who are being bullied report it to anyone. And even less for kids who witness it, report it to someone else.
I think it's so hard to report it. Mm-hmm. It is hard to report it, though, because nobody wants to be the tattletale.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to be the one who's stirring the pot, creating, you know, and then they worry if it's going to get worse if I say something. How do we get past that?
Well, I think that one of the keys to it, and not only reporting it per se, but just kind of ferreting it out when it may exist and not coming to the surface, is for all parents to be much more involved with their children's school day. Even though they're not there with them all day, making sure that they're asking them questions. How was your day? You know, just randomly, how is this class going? You know, what did you do at lunchtime today? And I've frankly done that with my children. I have three in the district. And it's during those types of conversations is when, you know, they'll tell me, oh, yeah, now that you mention it, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that. And it's amazing the kind of information that they'll come out with if you just ask that simple question, you know, what's going on or what did you see today at school?
I once, and I adopted this with my own kids, but I once heard someone talk about how they, every night before bed, with each of their children individually, would have a conversation about their day. And two of the questions they always asked was, what was the best part of your day? What was the worst part about your day? And came up with all kinds of things they never knew that was going on in their children's lives. And so I think it only takes a few minutes to do that. But by asking those questions, you might then have your child say, I felt really bad when my friend was being teased by so-and-so and I didn't know what to do. Well, that's a perfect opportunity for a parent to say, oh, I'm sure that must have felt scary or you felt helpless or it felt embarrassing. What do you think we could do about that? By trying to empower the child to come up with a solution, and if they can't, then you as the parent give them ideas for solutions and you do that together, makes a big difference. It's how you change the moral compass of a society is by having people speak up and say something when there's something that's awry.
It sounds like asking those open-ended questions is really the way to go, and having the lines of communication open with your children.
I also think that setting the expectation, I think, Lee, to your point, if you set the expectation with your child, even if they're not the ones being bullied, that, hey, if you see this going on,
right,
don't be that passive bystander, right? I mean, don't be afraid to assist or to help out. And I know that that is extremely difficult, especially for, like you said, high school kids.
Yeah.
But I was made aware of a situation this year in which that was happening at one of the high schools. And a student stepped in the middle of it and said, hey, knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't, I'm going to do da-da-da-da, right? And not that we want to encourage any of that. And the person who was doing the bullying turned around and said, well, stop bullying me.
Oh.
This particular child looked at him and said, you know, you haven't seen bullying yet. Knock it off. And every time I inquire about that now, it's like, no, he's been perfectly fine. Hmm. So
the other thing that I think helps with that is that there's strength in numbers. So if one kid speaks up and says something and then another kid sees that and they join, you've got two or three people addressing the bully, telling them that's not appropriate. You can't do that. You know, look at what you're doing. That makes a big, huge difference.
Absolutely. It needs to be cool to speak up.
Exactly.
Exactly. Lee Shipway, Pat McKee, our guest today, as we continue our discussion on solutions to bullying in our region's schools. You can join the conversation, too, at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Pat McKee and Lee Shipway are our guests today as we discuss the problem of bullying in local schools and what can be done to address the issue. We'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. There's some evidence that suggests that well-meaning programs in schools that bring attention to the problem can sometimes backfire. They have unintended consequences at times, and actually can result in increasing instances of bullying. I was reading a peer-reviewed journal article about this just yesterday. It pointed out that at times when teachers and staff call a child a bully or a victim, they're placing a judgment on that child. They're placing a label on that child. And then that can cause problems in the future for that student. What are your thoughts on that? Is that a thing? I mean...
That makes sense to me as a mental health therapist, because when someone has low self-esteem and they don't feel good about themselves, and then you're calling them a bully or some other label that makes them feel even worse, that just perpetuates the behavior, believe it or not. Interestingly, I once read a long time ago about a culture in an African nation. I don't remember the nation. When they ever have anyone in their community that does something against the rules, against the mores, what they do is they, especially children, they bring that child into a circle and all the community members surround them. And every single community member says one good or positive thing about that person to remind them of who they really are deep down inside. And think how that makes a difference, that it raises that person up. Instead of saying, you're bad, you're naughty, you're horrible, that just makes them feel worse.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree with what Lee was saying, because and it kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier. I think that the district as a whole is kind of, I don't want to say getting away from, but it's not focusing per se on just bullying. It's focusing on all of those behaviors, you know, like I mentioned before. There's just a, you know, there's a list of things that is, yes, outlined in the policy, but you just can't do these things repeatedly. And so rather than label somebody, you know, hey, you're bullying, this is what's going to happen, it's here's your behaviors, here's why those are incorrect, and here's what we need you to do about it.
You know, and Shereen, it's interesting you saw that in that peer-reviewed article, because some of the research that I did before the show also said zero-tolerance policies don't work. And expulsions, kicking kids out of school, doesn't help. And I think it goes to what we just spoke about, that it just makes them feel worse about themselves. And the worse you feel, the more you want to gain power. And one of the ways to do that is by bullying.
Another aspect of that, too, the lead author of that study that I was just talking about, she said in a statement that the programs can help students learn what a bully does and looks like, and it actually can teach them how to better hide their behaviors as well.
Oh.
Which is kind of what we're talking about earlier in the show with kids who, boy, they know how to keep it on the down low.
Well, and that reminds me of one of the things I do at my job is I do a treatment program for domestic violence abusers, adult men who are abusive to women, intimate partners. And oftentimes those programs get criticized for saying we're teaching them how to be better batters, because as we go through the controlling and abusive tactics, they have to lay out what they did so they hear other men what they did, and sometimes they can use it that way. I think one of the things to try to combat that is to teach empathy and to teach moral reasoning. And so that's one of the things we do with our adult abusers, but that's also a lot of stuff I've seen in the research with kids who are bullies, is you need to try to teach them empathy, to understand what it feels like to be in that other person's shoes.
Yeah, I would agree. And in my time on the board, I don't know that we have that I've seen an example in which we expelled a student for bullying or any of those types of behaviors. And everything that you read and see indicates just that if you expel the student, they're likely not going to improve their personal situation. But the other side of that coin is that in our district, we have, you know, 8,500 students that we need to be concerned about. And when you have an individual student or, you know, for whatever reason, is really disrupting more than just their own personal day, that's when, you know, the administrators have to get involved to say, you know, it's not okay for you to do this that impacts, you know, 30 other kids in the classroom.
Right.
I ran into a friend of mine last week who happens to be a middle school teacher here in the Wausau School District. And I just, in passing, mentioned that we were going to be doing this show. And she we ended up having this long conversation about her feelings about this issue, and she sent me an email afterwards saying, she said, I couldn't stop thinking about our conversation. There's so much that could be talked about. There's so much that can be done. And she – I wanted to share this that she said. My thought is that when you talk about bullying, you identify a bully and a victim, the bad guy and the good guy. However, the term victim by definition means a person is powerless and needs to be rescued. Right. I would rather teach my students they can take control of any situation and find a solution. Is that kind of the direction the district is taking at this time, or is that just
I think that what this person was referring to is an ideal situation, you know, that any student or adult, frankly, for that matter, can be empowered to take care of their situation and address it themselves. And I think that we're a long ways from that in terms of making each student feel like they have that capability, you know, mm-hmm. for lots of reasons. You know, you just at certain ages, kids don't have that wherewithal to, you know, quote, stand up for themselves, you know, and it would be great if everybody did and it, you know, kind of all worked itself out. But for whatever reason, we're not quite there yet.
I hear a lot. I hear this a lot. Boys will be boys. Kids will be kids. Bullying is a necessary part of growing up. It's part of the pecking order. Is there any truth to that? What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely, totally, unequivocally ridiculous. Could I say that any stronger? The boys will be boys mentality of a culture is not helpful whatsoever. That actually, in terms of domestic violence, it contributes a lot to domestic violence. Anytime you're going to excuse a behavior by just pushing it off and saying it's not a big deal, you're going to just enhance that and you're going to have more of that behavior. So I don't think a pecking order is something that needs to happen in a society in order for a person to pay their dues and grow up to be an adult. I don't think any of those statements are helpful whatsoever.
I completely agree. I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier, right? Under previous enforcement of or lack of enforcement of existing policies that we've had, that is essentially what I heard several times, right? Well, it's not bullying or it's not this. And I don't want to say that it was necessarily swept under the rug, but it wasn't taken as seriously as it should have. And the problems just kept perpetuating. And frankly, the numbers of them kept increasing. So I wholeheartedly disagree with that, too. Boys, girls, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I can remember when my kids were little in elementary school, and there was a teacher's aide that I was talking to, and she was talking about some things that she had seen on the playground. And she said to me, well, you know, sometimes these kids, they just have to work this out. You know, we can't intervene. They need to figure this out themselves. And I thought to myself, and I should have said this to her, these are small children. These are 8, 9, 10-year-olds. They don't have the skills to work this out. We're supposed to teach them as the adults how to do that. And so we need to make sure that we're intervening, and we need to make sure that if someone comes and tells us something as an adult, they're not going to be told that they're a tattletale. And that was one of the terms she used. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's not tattletaling. It is going to an adult that you trust saying, we need some help.
It's interesting that you brought that up, because I had a similar experience and conversation when my kids were in elementary school as well. One of them was going through some pretty significant bullying issues. Somebody stabbed him in the back with a pencil. He came home with a black eye. And the response I got was, "That's just they've got to figure this stuff out themselves. It's not helpful for you to intervene." And I thought, but my instinct is to be my child's biggest advocate.
Right.
I of course I'm going to intervene. It's interesting that attitudes seem to have changed mm-hmm. about that over the years, because 15, 18 years ago, that wasn't the case.
No.
I mean, that's the response I got.
So if you think about that with an academic analogy, that would be like saying, okay, we're going to put these second graders in a room. We're going to give them math books, and I'm not going to instruct them. I'm not going to teach them anything. You just got to figure that out yourselves. Okay, are they going to be able to do that? No. So why do we think they should be able to do that with social and emotional things? They don't. They need to be trained and need to be taught and helped.
Mm-hmm. How do you effectively empower children that way? I mean, how do you give them the coping skills, even as young children, to deal with this kind of stuff?
Well, I think as young children, we as parents need to try to teach our children right from wrong. We need to teach them that every human being is valued, no matter their age, their gender, their race, economic status, their disabilities or abilities, that every human being is worth as much as any other human being. And I think that is really at the crux of it. On that, you then build empathy for when they maybe see another child who's being mistreated, and then you help them to understand, if you don't feel comfortable going to someone at school, come to me as the parent, and then that parent making an agreement that I will say something, I will do something, I will back you up, I will back your friend up. And the more you do that and model that, I think it's all about modeling, then those kids grow up to understand that I do have some power, not just power, but I have a duty to help my fellow citizen.
And I think that word that you use, Shereen, advocate, you know, for your child, is 100% correct. And it goes back to, too, I mean, asking them what's going on, what's happening, et cetera. But then when they tell you, actually acting upon it and making sure that you follow through. I had a situation like that when one of my children was in elementary school, you know, kind of like yourself. It was clearly a case of a child who was bullying one of my children. And he was telling me about it. And I said, okay, let's get in the truck. And we took a drive over. We happened to know where this child lived, talked to his parents. He got out there. The child was very remorseful, started sobbing, and from that day forward, never happened again.
See, there you go.
Having that involvement is absolutely crucial. Unfortunately, not every child has a parent or someone that they trust who will do that for them. What about those children?
You know, that's a really tough question, and that's one of the things that always concerns me on the Youth Risk Behavior Survey is when they show the percentage of kids who say, I don't have a trusted adult at my school that I feel like I can go to. And the higher the grades go up, usually the more they say they don't have someone they can trust. Well, some of that is just because of adolescence, right? Adolescence, those years, kids just kind of pull away from adults. So I'm not really sure. It's like if they don't have someone at school – anybody in their life can make a difference. And this is something, a point I make to people all the time. So I hope people hear this. If you have a neighbor child who seems to be having a difficult time because maybe their parents aren't there, or maybe their parents have an alcohol or drug addiction, or there's something else going on in their life, don't consider, oh, that's none of my business. And have that child involved in your children's lives. You know, there's many times I can think of when my kids were little that we had neighbors where I knew things were not well at those families. And those kids always would show up at my house conveniently around mealtime. And I thought, I don't care. I'm feeding them. And mm-hmm. So if you're at my house and you're a kid, you're going to get fed if you're there at mealtime. Because I knew they weren't really getting taken care of at the other home. There is a lot of truth to the adage that it takes a village to raise a child. And it does. So if you see a child in need, don't feel like it's none of my business. You know, intervene appropriately, respectfully as you can.
And I would add to that, within the district, I have seen since Dr. Hilt and his administration, and frankly, the principals, the teachers who are extremely compassionate and aware, you know, when these things are going on, I think everybody makes a concerted effort to try to connect with those children who they think may be in that spot. I know Dr. Hiltz has talked about that on numerous occasions. I've heard high school principals talk about that you know what, I was able to make a connection with Joey finally, you know, after 2.5 years of being in my school. So I believe that is a something that's at the forefront of their minds. And again, day in and day out, we have got some of the most compassionate, caring, empathetic staff, from, you know, teachers, support staff, everyone. And it's a daily progress thing. You know, you got to try with everyone each day.
It is. And actually, I feel really badly for teachers these days because we happen to be the employee assistance provider for the Wausau School District. And we see a lot of teachers who are having anxiety and depression themselves because of what they're dealing with their students. The need is just getting higher and higher, and I feel like we're putting so many things on the educational system to do that should be done by parents and by families, but there's just too many kids living in families that are dysfunctional or where the skill set just isn't there as parents, and so then it's all put on the teachers.
Absolutely.
Well, I have to say, too, that parents sometimes have a difficult time accepting that their child is being a bully as well. Like, nobody wants to hear that their child is a bully. Of course, there are parents who aren't involved enough, and maybe they don't care. But I know as a parent that would be the worst thing for me to hear that my child was being being cruel, was bullying another child. What should parents do when they hear that? I mean, when somebody says your child is showing bullying behaviors at school, what should the parents do?
I guess to me the first thing would be to identify not just that they're a bully. What specifically are they doing? Mm-hmm. What is it that they're exhibiting? Whether it's in class, on the playground, after school, on social media. Be very, very clear. Here is what you're doing, and here is how it's impacting, this other particular child. And talk through what that is, what your expectations are that they have differently going forward. And if the expectations aren't met, perhaps what is the repercussions if that continues?
Mm-hmm. The other thing I would add to that as a mental health therapist is it's two simple questions that you can always ask anybody in any situation to try to get at the heart of what's going on underneath the surface. And so the question is, what were you thinking right before you made the decision to do that action? And what were you feeling right before that? Then if you want to carry a step further, okay, what were you feeling and thinking as you did the action? And then what were you thinking and feeling after it? And you'll see a pattern where I was feeling left out, or I was feeling alone, or I was feeling kind of insecure. And then during it, I felt like, oh, ha, like gotcha when I said that to you. And now I've one-upped you and I've got a little more power. And then after the fact, I feel powerful. But now at this point, I feel worse because I did that. To help a child see that pattern can stop that pattern very quickly, actually.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right, we do need to take a break. Lee Shipway, Pat McKee, our guest today as we continue our discussion on solutions to bullying in our region's schools. You can join the conversation, too. Your calls are welcome. 800-780-9742, the number to call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Pat McKee and Lee Shipway are our guests today discussing bullying in local schools and coping mechanisms for students. We'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. There is evidence that bullying is linked to depression and suicide in adulthood. Adults who were bullied as children are more likely to suffer from mental disorders later in life. So what about adults who are still suffering from the effects of bullying that happened to them years ago? What advice do you have?
Well, of course, I'm going to be a little biased because I'm a mental health therapist. I think it's very helpful for someone to seek professional help. If they, as an adult, they're still having issues related to when they were bullied as a child, there's all kinds of trauma therapists that are trained how to help people with that. So trauma is not just witnessing domestic violence or being in a car crash or a tornado. Trauma can be something that affects your inner psyche. And so if it's something that's being carried from childhood to adulthood, I would say seek out individual counseling. It can go very quickly, and you'll be amazed how much better that person's able to cope with day in and day out life activities.
What kind of coping strategies or support systems are available now for children who are being bullied? In the schools, are there some support systems in place?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we have social workers that are assigned, obviously, to every school. And I think that when you mention suicides and things that happen, the worst of the worst case scenarios later on in life or even during school, there is a need, and it's incumbent on those that hear about it to do something about it and not to, well, that was, as you said earlier, boys being boys or what have you. But to do something about it, and doing something about it should also include talking to those that are impacted beyond, here's what the quote official thing that's going to happen is, but follow up with that student or follow up with that child if you're a parent and say, how's it going now? How are you doing? Don't just assume because they're not telling you anymore that it's all done and over mm-hmm. with. But yeah, within the schools, there are the teachers, the administrators, the counselors. Everyone has obviously that vested interest in supporting those that are impacted.
You know, I clearly remember situations where a child who was being bullied was then identified by teachers as being the source of the problem. They were told, "You're not a team player. You're not fitting in. You need to try to fit in." How can parents advocate for their children in a way that doesn't make it worse when those kinds of situations happen? I mean, do you go to the school? What do you do?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that you have to start with reporting those situations, regardless of where you think they're falling on, you know, the scale of severity. You know, recognizing it, addressing it, and you know, having the proper follow-up and the proper course of action planned out, I think is important regardless of the quote, severity of it.
I would hope that attitudes have changed since then. I mean, I'm talking about back when I was in school or, you know, I mean, things that I saw. So I'm hoping that that attitudes have changed about the reasons that people are being picked on, that, you know, that there isn't that tendency to blame the person who's being picked on like we saw when our children were young, or
right.
Let them sort it out for themselves. That's part of growing up. Boys will be boys. Getting back to the rising rates of youth suicide, I want to point this out. Several states are responding to rising rates of youth suicide by considering legislation that is designed to criminalize bullying. Some are threatening jail time for bullying in the hope that such consequences will prevent both bullying and suicide. Some municipalities in Wisconsin, Shawano, Wisconsin Rapids among them, propose fines for the bullies. Those fines are passed on to parents when the bully is younger than 18. Is this a policy thing that can really work?
First off, let me just say this, that suicide in youth is a very complex situation, and suicide linked to bullying is very complex. It's not actually as prevalent as people think.
Okay.
There's usually a lot of other factors going on in that child's life that is leading to them feeling suicidal. The majority of people who are being bullied do not become suicidal, but when you add to that kids that maybe are in the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community, that's very high risk for suicide because they are seen as very different. Usually young people who die by suicide have multiple risk factors, and it could be genetics in terms of anxiety and depression that runs in their family. It could be that they're living in a family where there is some type of addiction or abuse going on. I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into that. I kind of see it as bullying is one more factor. It's like putting another straw on the camel's back, so to speak. But it's not the one thing that usually causes suicide.
That is important to point out, yes.
And when you're talking about municipalities like Shawano and Wisconsin Rapids, I've actually been kind of following those to see if they do have an impact. And the last I read, there wasn't enough data yet submitted to say, you know, did fining the parents. You know, I think in Shawano they didn't even have one reported incident in a particular calendar year to look at to say, you know, is this going to trend up or trend down? Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, I guess in my opinion, the good part about that is that you're forcing the engagement of the parent,
mm-hmm.
right, through a fine or through some kind of consequence. To me, that is, you know, probably step one of helping to solve it long term. Whether or not, you know, that works, specifically fining somebody $50 for this, I don't know. I think it's too early to tell.
Okay. So not enough evidence yet to make a decision on that. I'd like to talk a little bit about cyberbullying. We haven't gotten to that yet, and it was actually at my top of my list of things to talk about today, and we didn't get there. I've heard a lot of horror stories from fellow parents about their kids' experiences in recent years that have to do with social media, fake Twitter accounts, fake Facebook accounts, embarrassing photos or memes that are being shared just to taunt children. How prevalent is this, do you think?
I will say that from what I hear anecdotally, I would say that it is as prevalent, if not more, than the actual, you know, one-to-one, quote, bullying interactions within the schools. it is really easy for children and frankly for adults to sit behind a keyboard and, you know, fire off some mm-hmm. message that may be done in a, you know, kind of a heated moment per se, or someone else incited them, you know, they sent them a text. There's no filter, right? Nobody's stopping that message and saying, hey, think about what you're going to say here, and just off it goes. It's immediate. And I hear a number of examples of that, frankly, every month.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could name off six off the top of my head of just things that I've heard from parents who whose children have heard of things like this or been victimized by that kind of behavior. But that's got to be a thorny issue for schools. How do you even control that? I mean, from a legal standpoint, how do you get in? How do you know?
It is extremely difficult from a school perspective, because, you know, there's an adage that some things that happen off school premises, you know, we cannot, I guess, influence unless it begins to impact the child or children at school. And frankly, there's times that law enforcement gets involved where they can do something about it, but in other examples, they can't. I don't know all the specifics mm-hmm. behind it, but it is a very, very challenging scenario to frankly understand and then manage.
Well, it's different from when we were kids. I mean, we had to pick up the phone and yell at somebody or do it in person. But it's so different now because that the Facebook, the Snapchat, it never turns off. I mean, it's 24/7. What can parents do to help minimize that? Should they perhaps, you know, make sure that those phones are turned off at night? I mean, what are some things that you would recommend, either of you?
I would recommend that parents do turn the phones off at night. I'm horrified when I hear that kids have their phones on 24 hours a day and have them next to their beds, and in the middle of the night maybe get a text or a meme or something. That's one of the things I think is very different from when we were kids. If you were bullied, it happened at school. You could go home, and your home was your safe haven. And even though you were worried about going to school the next day because Jill or Johnny or whoever was going to be, you were afraid they're going to bully you, at least you had that safety at home. Now, like you said, Shereen, it's 24 hours a day. And it's not just one person. Because of Snapchat and Facebook, they can send a thing to your whole group of friends, and everybody sees all these things that are being said to you. And sometimes kids in your own group then feel like, I need to jump on the bandwagon mm-hmm. so I don't look like I'm in the out crowd. I want to be in the in crowd. And then you have 20 kids that are saying mean things about this one kid. So as parents, I would say, don't let them have their phones on. Limit the screen time and be an advocate. Mm-hmm. Like, Pat, when you talked about going to the other kid's house, that was great. That's what you need to do. So many times parents don't want to do that.
And educate your children that things that happen electronically never go away.
Right.
I have seen examples from what you know, my children have seen in these group chats or get forwarded around. Kids don't always make the best decisions about things that they're sending, you know, about themselves or what have you. And I think that they think, oh, well, I deleted that one, right? And one phrase always comes to mind, right? The internet never forgets.
Right.
And just making sure the kids realize that this is permanent. Anything you hit send on, there's a strong likelihood that it can be retrieved.
And here's an even really extreme example of that. Teresa Whetstone, our district attorney, does a seminar at the high schools trying to help kids understand about that fact and understand that if you decide you're going to take a selfie of yourself and part of you is naked and you're going to send that to another kid, guess what? You are now dispensing child pornography.
Which is a felony.
Which is a felony.
Yes. Yes. And I've seen that charged out before in other counties. It happens. And I'm heartened to know that there is an educational component here. Could there be more that's done on an educational level so that students do understand these consequences? I mean, what's being done now? Could there be more?
Sure. I think there can always be more education. Quite honestly, one of the challenges that we face as a district, and I think all districts probably face, is the amount of time that we have, not only in a given day, but in a given school year. There are so many things that we're required to teach and reteach and test and retest and all this other stuff. There's not a lot of, I don't want to say free time to address some of these topics. Not that that's not a good reason for it, but that's just the reality of our situation right now.
We were talking earlier about the panel discussion, the Department of Education panel discussion. Another piece that came out of that discussion that I thought was interesting, nearly 85% of LGBT students say that they are verbally harassed. 40% have been physically harassed because of their orientation. What can be done to change that from a school culture standpoint?
To me, it kind of goes back to identifying those examples when they happen and ensuring that children know what are the appropriate or expected behaviors, whether someone is an LGBTQ, whether they happen to have some other unique need or unique characteristic or attribute, and just teaching kids or showing kids what the expectations are, regardless of what demographic group they happen to be targeting at that point. Because the other thing that I've noticed is that as kids have gotten disciplined for some of these things, whether it was bullying or just bad behavior, that word spreads thanks to those electronic devices that we talked about. There's text, there's Snapchats going out, oh, so-and-so got suspended because they were harassing so-and-so. So I think the more that we do that and, the more that we, regardless of, again, what group it is, just immediately jumping in and telling kids, hey, this is not acceptable,
Absolutely.
I think that even the most well-meaning parents can be clueless sometimes. I know I didn't always know what was going on with my children as much as I tried to, and I felt that I was doing the right things. Even the most well-meaning parents don't always know. So what are some of the perhaps warning signs that parents should watch out for that might clue them in that something is not right at school, that something is going on with their child?
I think a lot of times if a child is under stress of any sort, you're going to see that in a variety of different ways. And this is hard with adolescents because one of the symptoms is that they spend more time alone and they're in their room more. Well, what do adolescents do? They spend more time in their room, right?
Right.
With younger kids, though, that's a for sure thing to look for if they are isolating themselves. If it gets really severe, you're going to notice changes in their eating habits and their sleeping habits. You're going to notice kids having nightmares or not being able to sleep or oversleeping, hypersomnia, that they're so depressed they can't get out of bed to go to school in the morning. Or you're going to see them lose their appetite or they're going to be overeating. You might also see them, like they've loved football, and all of a sudden they want to quit the football team. It's like, okay, why would that be? Or they've been in band or drama, whatever the case may be, and all of a sudden they don't want to have any part in that. Anything that just seems odd to a parent, don't brush it away. Know that there must be something going on behind that and see if you can maybe have a conversation with your child about what's going on in their life.
The only other piece I would add to that is don't be afraid to grab their phone and review things that they're having,
right?
Text message conversations. I don't understand all these different Instagram stories or blogs or whatever it is, and review it. Make sure that you see what they're talking about. I've again seen examples where kids were expressing certain things to other kids, because they weren't comfortable talking to an adult. Well, if you randomly check, because you have to be immersed in your child's electronic communication just as much as you are, with the written and the verbal at home. So.
Make sure you have their passwords.
Absolutely.
Make sure
yes.
that you have the passcode for their phone, that you can access that stuff. I mean, those are important things too.
Absolutely. And parents oftentimes say, well, I feel like I'm snooping. It's like, well.
You are.
You are snooping. But it's for a good reason. It's for safety.
Exactly.
And as long as you make that clear to your child, this is about safety.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I tell parents is, okay, who owns that phone? Who pays for that phone?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do. Well, okay. Then you have a right to look at that and explain that to that child.
Absolutely. You mentioned a website that you thought was really helpful. I'd like you to mention that again so people can get some resources.
It is stopbullying.org.
Okay.
And it has great information on how to not be a bystander, how to be an upstander, good information on kids who typically are targeted. And it has some the thing I really love about it is that they talk about from the Centers for Disease Control standpoint, we need to look at this as a public health issue. So it's stopbullying.gov.
Okay, wonderful. Stopbullying.gov. Thank you both so much. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Wausau School Board Vice President Pat McKee and Peaceful Solutions therapist and co-founder Lee Shipway. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer today is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route51. Next week, we'll take a different kind of road trip, this time into outer space and the search for extraterrestrial life. Until then, we're headed out of town.